Are you ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast, and today we have Harrison from Save Your Sons Twitter. And this is great timing when most of us are trying to diversify away from Google traffic, especially with the recent updates, AI content coming into play, and many other things that are threatening your traffic coming from Google, and you don't want to rely on that one area of traffic only. And many of us will look to diversify into YouTube, but there are other channels to do that, and there are people making a lot of money building Twitter followings and monetizing them. And this is what we dive into today, and we focus purely on Twitter growth, how Harrison has done that. He's got 450,000 followers, makes a full-time living doing that, coaches people on how to do it. I'm actually one of his clients doing as part of his cohort regarding Twitter growth, so I've got some firsthand experience doing that with him, which is we kind of dive into a little bit of that as well, and the idea of creating tweets that are going to get you engagement and growth versus just tweeting to tweet. And we also go into the idea of creating high ticket service or high ticket coaching offers as a way to bring in a lot of money to your business and then being able to create digital products off the back of that. So this is a highly valuable conversation. I'm hoping that it starts to turn some wheels in your head of where you can take your niche website and not just rely on display ad affiliate marketing as the monetization, but actually having something more tangible, more of a brand presence, and more of, a trusted brand on social media and on all platforms. So sit back and enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
All right, welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have Harrison, Save Your Sons. We don't have his last name here. We have his partly anonymous, what would we call it? I guess we call it your Twitter name or something, or your business name as your last name today. But this is Harrison's first time, I guess. You mentioned the first time showing your face on a podcast or at least on something.
I think so. I've done a lot of podcasts, and I believe this is the actual true face docs. So you got a big scoop here, James. This is a big deal. Now I started the account that the brand that I run as a brand, a quote unquote anonymous brand, but it was never like the true intention was to be anonymous. That was never my intention forever. And with my clients and stuff, obviously we get on calls like this all the time, but finally getting around to showing the world who's behind it all.
No, perfect. I mean, I think this episode it's perfect timing, I think, with most people in the niche website space who are looking to build their websites and kind of rely on Google traffic and their kind of monetization strategies around affiliate marketing display ads. And obviously now with the frequent Google updates, AI content and ChatGPT and hitting the market and people trying to find a way to essentially create a moat around their brands or to create, I guess, websites and businesses that are more stable than relying on one source of traffic. And most people will go towards, hey, let's start creating YouTube videos and start going down that route, which is all well and good. But there are other ways to do it. And you've done an amazing job of leveraging social media, especially Twitter, and leveraging services as well on top of that, and communities, which I really, really like. And I think it's going to be really valuable for the listeners here too, if they're looking to expand their size. But maybe just to start, Harrison, you want to maybe give a brief background about yourself and kind of what you're doing, and we'll dive straight into it.
Yeah, man, definitely. And thank you for having me. I don't think I said that yet, but I'm really excited to chat. And James and I go way back. We've known each other for, I don't know, a couple of years now.
Yeah,
and
sure.
through the community that that's attached to my Save Your Sons brand on Twitter and Instagram. So I started Save Your Sons back in 2020, and it was shortly after our first son was born. And it was like right in the middle of COVID, and everyone was on lockdown, and I was at my 9-to-5 job, and I knew our little boy was coming. And so what I did was, I think most, like we talked about this too, James, when you're a dad, when you're having your first kid, your wife will go into what we call like a nesting mode. And she, she wants to get the nursery right. She wants to get the nursery painted, get the crib assembled, and she's got shopping lists for you. And you're like, all right, let's get everything ready. And what I realized was I felt something similar to that too. I think men feel something similar to that too. And for me, my male nesting instinct manifested itself as I want to do something for my boy who's about to be here that he has that can begin the foundation of the legacy that I want to leave for him. And what that looked like for me was I wanted to write down all of these things that were really important to me as a young man that helped me develop and grow into the man that I am today, in case something ever happened to me, in case I wasn't around, in case, you know, God forbid something happened and I couldn't raise him the way that I wanted to. I wanted him to have something from me that he could go back to when those times are hard for a young man in his late teens, early 20s, and he's trying to discover who he is. And so I started just writing that stuff down. And somewhere along the way, I had this thought, because we were all locked down on COVID, and and my company, we were all working from home, and it was really kind of, you know, I had some free time. And I thought, maybe if this stuff will help him, it'll help other guys too. And so I've in earnest fired up a Twitter account in August of 2020 and just started sharing the same kind of stuff, the same stuff that mattered to me as a young man and helped me develop myself and helped me find a purpose that I needed to be fulfilled, and just started sharing it. And it caught on with a lot of people really, really quickly. And I think it shows that that's a message that's missing from our society pretty significantly. The fact that so many people wanted to read it and wanted to share it and wanted to participate in it. And so that was in 2020. And as of right now, I've expanded that brand into Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, email. And we're all summed up. There's just shy of, I think, 700,000 followers of the Save Your Sons brand across different platforms. Mm-hmm. And it's like I said, it speaks to, this is something people want to hear. This is something people want to talk about. We aren't talking about this stuff enough as a society. And really, it's only been a little over 2 years, and there's a ton of stuff that I want to do and a ton of directions I want to take this in. And right now I'm grateful and blessed to be able to do this, to run Save Your Sons full time and provide a really nice business to give me some extra time with my family, but also have the security and the autonomy that go along with being your own boss, which is the dream, right?
Yeah. Yep. I think that's what everyone listening to this is either aspiring towards or is currently doing. But I think, is it like 75% of your followers are on Twitter? Or 75% of those followers are Twitter?
450,000 are Twitter, and then the like almost 160 something thousand are Instagram, and then the rest are the other platforms.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So for anyone listening, we're going to dive into a little bit of the Twitter growth side, because I think that is a direction that a lot of people aren't thinking about too much with their online businesses. And there's almost an art to it. I know after talking to you and going through this myself as well, man, like writing tweets is a whole different ball game to writing articles on a website or writing whatever. I mean, I'm always in this thing where I like to write short or long form informational style content, but that content doesn't really take off, or people don't really share it because it's helpful, but it doesn't get the engagement. And there's obviously certain ways to do that. But before we dive into that, you started your Twitter account. How did you end up growing it? Did people just start liking and retweeting the stuff you were tweeting, or did you have other people help help you with growth, like retweeting things and whatnot?
Yeah, I did it all organically. And one of the things I do in my business now is I help other guys or women build an online brand. And because I kind of figured it out, and I've done it really successfully with 40, 50 clients so far who've all been really successful and started building their brand, usually primarily on Twitter, and then building a business around it. And for me, I did it the hard way. And so when I have clients now, we take out some of the inertia and take out some of a lot of the difficulty and leverage the lessons that I learned and my business partner learned while we were doing it ourselves. But yeah, I mean, there's no substitute for consistency, for being a good creative writer, a good thinker, having something interesting to say. The best clients that we have always have an interesting background. It's way easier to grow a brand online if you're somebody who's done something really cool or really interesting in real life versus, you know, a guy off the street who just read Atomic Habits once and was like, I'm going to start a personal brand. Well, that makes it a little more difficult. We can still work with you, but it makes it a little more difficult. And for me, I was fortunate enough, you know, I come from a sort of writing heavy background. I was a history and English major in college. I graduated from law school, did a ton of writing there. And so I'm pretty efficient when it comes to, you know, taking ideas from my head and getting them out in a way that's digestible and gets people excited to read. And that was the key at the beginning was share cool stuff. And the more you do that, the more consistently you do that, you slowly build an audience over time. It took me 3 or 4 months before I even had, I think 4 months before I had 10,000 followers. It took me over a year to get to 100,000. And we see people with coaching that do that way quicker because, like I said, we're able to leverage our current networks to help them grow. And then we're able to cut off a lot of the learning curve that took a while. But for me, it was all about showing up every single day, no matter what, even though there were days where I wanted to quit and there were days where I was like, this is stupid. What am I doing? This is, nobody wants to read this. So you have all these negative things that you say to yourself, but you just keep coming, keep showing up. And as time goes on, you build that momentum and you build that following, and then you have that traffic. And that's what it's really all about. I mean, if you're building a website, you know that your bread and butter is traffic. You got a conversion rate of whatever you're selling, and you know what that conversion rate is. And then it's just a math problem. It's how many people can you send to that offer that are relatively qualified. And that's where social media is so valuable, because you can optimize for Google all day long and compete with, you know, I don't know. I'm not in that world very, very deep, but if you have that built in social media audience, then you have people who have proven that they like you. And they know about you and they understand what you talk about, and they're your traffic. They're your traffic source. And I have 700,000 people. I mean, they're not all online at the same time, of course, but 700,000 people to pull from for any offer that I come up with, that anything I want to sell. There's these people that know me. They're not stumbling across me for the first time on Google. I don't have to establish that trust with them. It's already been established to an extent. And I can call on that anytime I want. And that's why I think a social media, it's all about diversification. You want to have everything. Yeah. You want to have a lot of different sources of traffic. But one of the easiest ways to build up a big traffic source and one of the most profitable is to invest some time in social media.
Yeah. And I think what deters a lot of people is what deterred me at the beginning as well, is it's like a hamster wheel, right? Because it's not like something where you're ranking something on your website and it's there and people can find it a year later. On social media, you post something once and it's gone within 24, 48 hours. And as you mentioned, it's the consistency. You just have to keep publishing, keep publishing, keep publishing. But the reward is the fact that you have a bit of trust, as you mentioned, a bit of trust or relationship with your followers there that potentially can convert better when you're looking for offers.
And James, you said something really interesting, really important actually, about social media. That's a unique feature of social media that a lot of people don't think about. If you have a blog, it's kind of hard to write a blog post in March and then write the same blog post in June, because people, if you have loyal readers, and you're like, you just kind of did this, so I can go look and see it.
And you can't write the same article twice.
Oh, right. Yeah. That too.
Yeah.
But social media doesn't work that way. In fact, one of the things that I do that's a it's not even a secret, it's a smart way to approach content creation is if something worked a few months ago or a year ago, I have a saved search in my Twitter where it's like, what did I tweet this day 3 years ago, or 2 years ago? And I'll go back and look and I'll see what was the things that resonated, and then I'll update it or I'll reuse it. I'll take it back, make it fresh for today. And so the idea of having something that is evergreen is a little different on social media, because it's something that worked a few months ago or 6 months ago, it's going to work again. And people have such short attention spans, and they've consumed so much content from the last time that you posted this. They're not going to remember. They're not going to call you, but like, you posted this already. And even if they do, I say, well, okay, have you ever seen the same ad from Coca-Cola twice? Yeah, of course you have. Like, get over it. Get over yourself. It takes a lot of the pressure off of yourself to come up with something brand new every single day. A lot of people have that misconception about content creation. That's not how you have to do it. No one's giving you an award for coming up with something new every single day for the rest of your life. They're giving you an award for how much money can you make and how big can you grow your influence and your following.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point as well. And I mean, most people, well, a lot of the people won't even see your original tweet anyway, so it'll be fresh and new to them just because of the algorithm, how the algorithm works.
And if you're gaining 30,000 followers a month, then in 4 months you got 100,000+ new people who
that's true.
Definitely didn't see it. So great. If people liked it then, they'll like it again.
Yeah. Well, let's dive into actually writing the tweets. And I know this could be a whole damn 10-hour-long seminar in itself in terms of the tweets. And I know I've seen some of your PDF documents with how in-depth they are. But maybe cover just some basic structuring stuff. Because, like, as I mentioned, I tend to write more short-form informational stuff. It's not quite, I guess, even if it's on a controversial topic, it's still not that engaging because it's more trying to educate. That's just kind of how I've written. It's how I write a lot of my blogs and stuff. And that's just kind of my style. And then just, I guess, writing for engagement and writing to grow your social media is a completely different skill. So do you want me to dive into a little bit of that?
Yeah. So the way I think about it is it's really important to get reach. It's really important to get big on social media. And that's kind of contrary to what a lot of the quote unquote gurus will say. But this is just the way I think about it is the bigger you get, the more gravity that you have. Gravity meaning you're literally pulling things towards you, like the earth has gravity. Mm. Well, if you become a really big account on social media, a really big brand on social media, you're going to develop that same gravity. People are going to be attracted to you and they're going to come to you. This happens to me all the time. People come to me with cool ideas and cool offers, and sometimes we do it and it's really lucrative and that's awesome. That would never happen if I had gone for the more rifled approach of, well, I'm just going to create content for a very niche down offer, and I'm not going to try to, I don't care about my follower count. Like, I do care about my follower count. It's important. And so the content that I create reflects that. Now, there's an important caveat with that. You also want to display some form of expertise and some form of differentiation so that when it does come time to make an offer or to put out an offer, that people aren't just looking at you as like, well, all you do is post one line little stupid tweets like drink water and wake up early and lift weights.
Cold showers.
Take cold showers. Like, great. Earth shattering. So you have to create that balance. And there's a ton of strategies that I use for that. Sometimes I'll write like a simple tweet and let it start getting traction and going viral. I call this the 1-2 punch. So I'll write a simple tweet. A good example was I wrote like, if you think a gym membership is expensive, just wait until you see how expensive it is to be old and frail. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's like kind of a platitude, kind of like a little silly thing but it hits, and it hits people emotionally, which is a key for getting people to share. If you hit them with a gut punch or something, then they're just like, oh man, like, dang, that's right. I'm feeling something from reading this. Of course they're going to share it. So you let that get some traction, but instead of just leaving it as it is, Twitter's really cool because you can follow up that same tweet with a little bit more nuance. And we did this with you, James, the other day when you posted a funny meme, and then you wrote more about it though. Under it, you turned it into like a thread, and I do that all the time. That's a practice that I use all the time. So you add a little bit more nuance, add a little bit more thought, and prove to the readers that there's something more going on with you besides just some guy who's sitting around slamming out platitudes all day.
No, that's a good call as well. Yeah, that thread I posted was way too long under that one yesterday. I basically copy and pasted an article under it.
Yeah. You know, it's a learning experience.
Yeah, a learning curve, because I'm a Twitter noob as well. But I mean, it's funny because you can really push buttons as well on social media. I mean, yesterday and a couple of days ago, pushed a lot of buttons around the trans debate, I guess, in sport. And I've written about it quite a bit and kind of broken down the science around it. But people just take a huge emotional response. And you don't even have to give a point of view. Just certain topics just hit and just like people just take the bait. I guess you call it engagement bait, right? People just take the bait and just start going hard in the comments, and you just get more and more reach. But I guess, is there any advice for someone who's maybe getting into, I guess, writing Twitter or social media around controversial topics? Like maybe they don't want to have to deal with comments and stuff like that. Are you just better just to avoid things like that? Or are these kind of necessary to kind of dive into to really get growth?
Well, my personal philosophy on that, and I'm obviously in a space that lends itself to a little bit more controversy. I mean, anytime, this is sad, but anytime somebody talks to men exclusively, which I kind of do now, a lot of the stuff I say can apply to men and women, but okay. Yeah. But I'm here talking to men because that's what I know. That's what I am. That's what I've experienced, and that's who I'm able to help the most. So I'm talking to men, and anytime you do that, it can lend itself to more divisiveness and more polarization, and people say, "Well, why are you excluding women?" I'm not consciously excluding women. I'm one of the few people who is unabashedly saying this is a message for men, and that's okay. It's okay that men talk to each other by themselves. That's okay. it shouldn't be controversial. But that said, I actually do consciously avoid inflammatory stuff. Because it's not worth the energy. Because, like, I'm sure you've seen, James, like if you do say something inflammatory, even if you know it's true, and even if it's a firmly held conviction that you have, you're gonna invite furious, angry debate under your content. And I don't have time for that. I don't have time for that. It's an energy drain. I'm busy. I got two kids. I got a business to run. I don't have time to worry about people mouthing off under my stuff. So that's one of the reasons I avoid it. The other reason I avoid it is, what's the point? Like, I could go out and say something real spicy and controversial to what? To like prove that I'm edgy and like to like make this small fraction of my audience who think that way be like, yeah, it's awesome. Like it doesn't move the needle for me. And so I say what I believe. I say what I think is important, and I say what I think needs to be said, but I don't go out and try to be controversial just for the sake of being controversial. Yeah. Well, the other thing to remember is at the end of the day, I don't own my Twitter account. I don't own those Twitter followers. I own the traffic now. I'm borrowing the traffic, which is really important and really valuable, but it can be gone in a finger snap. It can all be gone in a finger snap. I'm very aware of that, and everyone who's on social media is very aware of that. So why would I intentionally antagonize the people who make those decisions? I'm not going to go out of my way to antagonize those people, because it would be a foolish thing to do from a business perspective.
Yeah, and I guess sending them to email us is one way to kind of, I guess, safeguard yourself at least a little bit, so you can kind of own some of those followers too. But I know what you mean about the controversy stuff. Like, I found that if you post in a way where you don't spell everything out for the person who's reading it, so you kind of leave it for their interpretation. So you don't have to be intentionally controversial, but you just don't want to, I guess, you don't want to give all the information of what it is. So for example, the other day I posted a picture of a woman doing jump squats, and she was doing it with her arms going the wrong way. You know how people do it? When they jump, their arms go down, and then when they land, their arms come up, which is like the opposite way when you're supposed to jump.
Right.
And I posted that, and I go, if you're doing jumps like this, you need to stop. So I didn't say what was the problem on that picture. And so people kind of understood what I was talking about. But then one lady comes in, was talking about how, well, I'm objectifying women, and just went full Karen the post, right? And so I just replied, waiting for you to post where we objectify women. And then people just came into the comments and started ripping her too. And then, like, that post is still getting likes and everything because this person came in trying to interpret it the way she thought it was basically what we were trying to say, even though it was more about the actual exercise being performed. So just small things like that seem to help with engagement. I don't know if that's a strategy that you employ or use, or that someone could use. But something that I've found that at least just leaving it for the reader's interpretation versus trying to interpret it for them.
Yeah, definitely. And it all to me, what you're talking about, James, the reason that worked is it gets back to the reason that things go viral on social media in the first place. And this is something I spend a lot of time coaching people on and talking about a lot is a lot of times people really misunderstand the algorithm and they misunderstand how it actually works and what its actual function is. But at the end of the day, the most important function of the algorithm is that it's going to reward content and reward creators that get people addicted to the app. If I can prove that I can consistently get people spending more time on the app through the content that I produce or the content that I share, then it's going to reward me and show me to more people because that's what it cares about. Instagram's the same, Facebook's the same, TikTok's the same, Twitter's the same. They're all the same. They reward content creators who prove time and time again consistently that what they produce equals more hours spent by users on the app. So that's the main mental model you need when you're creating content is how can I create something that's going to get people engaging with this for longer? Mm. And so what you did was you created, you put a meme out there and then you let a conversation happen organically. And that conversation, what are people doing? They're like, oh, I want to read what this crazy lady said. I want to read what people are saying to her. All that time, they're under your content. You're getting points. Yeah. Ding, 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 ding. You're getting points from the algorithm the whole time they're under there. The algorithm's like, oh, yeah, this guy's doing what we want. This guy's doing it. He's getting people engaging. And so the next time you tweet, it's going to show it to more people because you've got that track record because people are down there reading what happened under your tweet. Mm. So you can use that information in a lot of different ways. But the most important thing to remember is are you a person who gets people engaging on these apps? And they're spending a lot of time on these apps. If so, you're going to get rewarded. But if people see your content and they scroll right past it, they look at it for a quarter of a second because they measure how long you're looking at stuff too, how long your readers are actually like it's measuring how long people stare at a tweet. It's taking that into account for how much attention that you're driving. And then it's a little stopwatch that's going, all right, this person's, and on TikTok, you actually see it. Like every post I make on TikTok, it'll say this drove 2000 hours of views or whatever. YouTube's the same way, but they're all measuring that. So if you can be the person that is hogging up users' time and they're spending their time engaging with you and not somebody else, then you're the one that's going to get rewarded for that.
Mm, that's a good call. And actually, before going back into some of the, I guess, tweet structures, I know you've looked at the Twitter algorithm they released. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think a lot of people really misunderstood it. I read a lot of hot take threads, and I was like, none of this really passes the smell test for me. But I read one that was from like an actual coder, and it made a lot more sense. And really, it validated everything that I already taught and already thought. And what matters most is engagement and time spent engaging. So on Twitter specifically. They assigned like point values to different engagement types, like and people really attached to. They were like, "Well, a like is worth 30," which is what the release said. Like, okay, whatever that means. A like is worth 30, and a comment's only worth 1. And I'm sitting there saying, "Well, no, okay, that may be quote unquote true, whatever that means." But I've seen time and time again that a tweet that has 100 comments and 100 likes will get way more impressions and way more profile views than a tweet that has 1,000 likes and 5 comments. So comments far outperform when it comes to how far the reach of your content's going to get. And the reason why is because what we were just talking about a second ago.
Yeah.
If you have a tweet with 100 comments, people are getting in there and they're reading those comments. They're saying, what are people saying about this? What are people saying? So they're spending more time with your content. They're spending more time engaging with something that you are responsible for. And that, more than any other engagement metric, is what's going to push you farther and farther and expose you to more and more eyeballs. And of course, more impressions equals more potential. It's a funnel. The people that see you, a certain percentage of them are going to click your profile and a certain percentage of them are going to follow you. So the bigger number of impressions that you have, the better, the farther your reach can get, the better. And if you want to have that reach, the best thing you can do is create content that people spend a long time engaging with. That's why threads do so well. Because it's not like I could post a meme and get 20,000 likes on the meme, but it's only going to get I don't know, 500,000-700,000 impressions. But because people are just looking at it for half a second. They're not commenting. They're looking at it. They might like it, but then they're moving on. So Twitter doesn't really care about that. Not nearly as much as if I post a thread that the average read time is 5 minutes or 10 minutes. Mm. Okay. If everyone who sees this thread is spending an average of 5 minutes on it, Twitter can show them a lot of ads while they're doing that. They can't show them a lot of ads while they spend half a second liking a meme.
Yeah. I've seen that as well from the recently starting the Twitter stuff, is if I get people to tag whoever in the comments who relates to that meme or whatever it is, that post goes far more, I guess, viral than when it's just a picture without having to tag anyone or without having to have a call to action for engagement, basically. And it just kind of not flops, but definitely doesn't do as well.
Yeah. I mean, all those tricks, they all work. So if you go look at my timeline at Save Your Sons on Twitter, you'll see a lot of the times I'll post a meme, but then I'll ask a question with it. I mean, like, what do you think happened? Why do you think this is? Or what would you add? Whatever. Because I know that if I'm prompting people to ask a question, then they're going to answer. A certain percentage of them are going to answer. And that's only going to drive up the average engagement time that people have on my content. And it's only going to increase my reach.
That's a good call. And do you want to maybe dive into maybe just a couple of other go-to tweet structures that you like to use for, I guess, improving that engagement and reach?
Yeah, definitely. So there's two that I'll talk about, two that I use all the time with myself and with clients. And the first one is just a simple list. So we're not reinventing the wheel here. We're not doing rocket science. We'll write a list. And one I'll say, like, something, one I've had a lot of success with, one had like 10 million views when I did this, 10 million impressions, and I gained like 8,000 followers through 5 seconds of work. It was subjects that should be mandatory in public schools or something. Mm. And I just listed out,
I remember that
10
one.
Or 15 subjects that I thought, you know, if you got to go to a public school, we should at least be teaching this stuff, like how to do insurance and how to change
like
tires.
Taxes and tax, like,
yeah, how to do your taxes, yeah, and stuff like that. And but then what I did at the end, which is really important, was I didn't just leave the list and like drop the mic. I made the list and I said, what am I missing, or what would you add to this list? So you're inviting people to participate and share their own opinion, and people love doing that. If you can get people if it's like the old How to Win Friends and Influence People, people's favorite subject is themselves, always, 10 times out of 10. So if you can get people sharing their own opinion, they're talking about themselves when they're doing that, and they like that. So ask your audience their opinion. Do it frequently. And anytime I do a list, I ask them, what did I leave off? Or what would you add? What did I miss? Give me your opinion. And that creates comments. That drives comments, which drives engagement, which drives that average view time up, which only incentivizes the algorithm to push me farther and farther and farther.
Oh, that's good. Did you say you have one more?
Yeah. So the other one I use this for clients a lot, and it is, I call it, this is top secret, by the way, James. So your listeners are getting a treat. This is a valuable trade secret that I'll share is I call it an account definition tweet. And what an account definition tweet is, basically, think about if you were going to create a Google display ad for like why people should come to your website. You're doing something similar with why people should follow your account. So I use this all the time. The first time I used it was an accident. I didn't even know what I was doing. I just wrote something that said, it was like, this account doesn't exist to give parenting advice. It exists to give young men the tools they need to be intentional and engaged fathers. There's a big difference, something like that. And it went crazy. And I was like, what is happening? Why am I gaining so many followers? This was back, like, I'd only been doing Twitter for a couple months, and I gained like 1,000 followers in a day, and I'd never done that before. And I was like, what's happening? What's going on? And I realized, I went and looked at the analytics, and I was like, there are a ton of profile clicks for this tweet. Usually I'll see 100,000 impressions. I'll get 300 profile clicks, somewhere in that range. And if my conversion rate's about 100, so I know every 100,000 impressions, I usually gain about 100 followers. That's pretty good. That's good to know. I know what I need to do. But with this tweet, if I had 100,000 impressions, I would have had like 2,000 profile clicks on this tweet, and it converted higher too. And so I asked myself, well, why? why is this so outsized? I've never seen anything like this. What's happening? And I realized it was because of the copy. It was because of the copy of the tweet. It said what this account is. It was an ad, and I didn't even know I was writing an ad, but it was an ad for my account. It said, this account exists to do this. It doesn't exist to do this. It exists to do this. If that resonates with you, join us. Join our mission. And when people read that, they're like, the first thing that happens is they see the words, this account exists, and they're like, oh, I got to go click that profile and see if they're at all, if they at all relate to what I'm saying, they're going to click my profile more than they would if I had just posted a meme or a one-liner or whatever. They're going to say, oh, he's talking about me. This is about me. This is cool. I got to go and investigate this. So those simple words, this account exists too. Anyone who sees that, that it resonates with them, they're going to go click your profile and they're going to go follow. And they wouldn't get that information off of a regular tweet. They wouldn't understand that. They would just, they might connect some dots and make some inferences. Like maybe this guy talks about raising boys to be good men, but I don't know. But if you spell it out explicitly and you're able to get impressions on it, those impressions are going to convert to followers at a much higher rate than they will on any other type of content on Twitter. And I'd use it on Instagram too. I use it on every platform.
Oh, wow.
And think about it, like you're putting out an ad for your account that really is just describing what you do and why people should follow you and what difference you're going to make in their life.
That's a good tip. I'm going to have to think about how I can do that too. But are there any
niches? Yeah, man, write one up.
Write one up, dude. Yeah. Are there any niches on Twitter and stuff that don't work, or maybe are really, I guess, hard or a struggle to grow?
Everything, there's an audience for everything. There's 8 billion people in the world. Half of them are on the internet. Like the I always say, like you could, if you wanted to sell slippers to Inuit grandmothers in Canada, like you could find, you could build a following just doing that because there's enough people online. So I always tell people like there's a niche for everything. There's an audience for everything. There are definitely some that grow faster than others. So the way to think about that is if you don't know what you want your niche to be, and you want to pick one that's a little bit more faster growing, that has a wider well of people to pull from, what you should think about is this. We are virtue signaling animals. We evolved to be virtue signalers, and we can make fun of virtue signalers, but we are too. I am too. You are too, James, even though we make fun of the ones who are like online, but we all care about that. We all care about how we're perceived by the group. So pick a niche. If you want to grow quickly, pick a niche that has positive associations with being associated with that niche. So why does my account grow so quickly? One of the reasons is because I fight fatherlessness. I want to end fatherlessness, and I talk about that all the time. And I know that if we intentionally raise our boys and we teach them how to be strong, capable, caring men, then more of them are going to be dads. And if we have more dads in our society, then our society is going to be better off because all the bad things that come along with fatherlessness are going to decrease. Well, that's something that almost everybody can get behind. It doesn't matter if you're right, left. Now, some leftists are pretty far left, and they like don't want to get associated with it. So I don't want to get into that on your podcast. But most people will pick that up and say, yeah, I support this. Like this is, I want to be seen as a good person on the right side, on the good team. And what better team to be on than somebody who wants more dads? That's a good thing. So, to a large extent, and I don't mean to sound cynical, but people follow because it's a signal. It's a signal to people in their network. Remember, people are on social networks. They're connected to their friends. They're connected to their families, especially Instagram and Facebook. Like everything they do, their grandma's going to see. Everything they do, their wife or their friends are going to see. So they're very conscious of that when they choose who to follow. So if you want to grow quickly, pick a niche that if I was going to follow that niche, I'd be proud because I know it'd be a signal that I'm a good guy. If other people I knew followed, if other people I knew that I followed it, you following me?
Yeah. Gotcha.
I said follow like five times in a row. And then on the flip side of that is niches that grow more slowly. So obviously if you're just like so obscure, like the slippers to grandma's example from earlier, like that's going to grow a little more slowly. But also think about it from the virtue signaling angle, because you can have negative social proof as well. So like I work with a guy who's a great guy and he's doing really well. His business is crushing. But we knew going into it that growth was going to be a little bit more difficult for him. And why is that? Because of what he talks about. What does he talk about? He talks about helping guys quit porn addictions.
So
it's a great thing he's doing. He helps a lot of guys. He erases a lot of pain in this world, because when a guy's in the grips of that, it's really, it's debilitating for them. And so he's doing great work and he gets great results. But the average guy is going to be a little bit reticent to follow an account that's all about helping guys quit porn. Because of what we just talked about, because it's a negative signal. They don't want to send that signal to their networks that they're struggling with that. So the growth is going to be harder. So if you don't know what your niche is, or you're just starting out and you want to emphasize rapid growth, pick a niche or pick a subject matter, whatever you want to call it, that has positive associations in society. And if you pick one that has more negative associations or things that people wouldn't really want people knowing that they're reading about, then you're going to grow a little bit more slowly.
Yeah, nice. That's good advice too. And I want to know as well, how do you direct your followers to your offers? Because I know people, or if you post like links in your original tweets, you just get absolutely throttled and no one sees your stuff. So what are your tactics then for sending people to offers and converting?
So I'm actually really fortunate. The majority of my income is inbound at this point, because I have such a track record with people. People ask me like, what is the business? Cause I don't really talk about the business that much. Cause I don't need to.
No.
I'm making like 4x what I used to make at my job, and I never have to market the business. All I market is the brand, which is fun, which is great. But it all comes from inbound, because I'll get good results for somebody and people will be like, how'd you grow so fast? How'd you make so much money? And I'll be like, oh, I worked with Harrison and I went through this program. And so the offers that I have, I do a little bit of ghostwriting. I have a small agency on the side that does that. A lot of coaching where I'll help guys build an audience and build a business around that audience. And then I have, I do a retreat, like a business retreat that coaches people. Mm. It's for men, that coaches men on building a business, especially while you have a family and balancing all of that. Those are like the three main buckets. And then the fourth bucket is things that are directly associated with Save Your Sons, like my community and my, I have an info product that serves as a lead gen for the higher ticket stuff. But I don't have to talk about that stuff very much. Because, and this is another reason why your listeners should invest in social media, because I have a big following and people talk about that. And it's not because I'm special. It's because I've built something that is a center of discussion. So like, think about it like this. You could be the best copywriter in the world and you could sell your services for, I don't know what copywriters charge. I never hired one. I don't know. I mean, you could be on a $5,000 a month retainers for big companies, whatever. Okay. That sounds pretty good. And you're like writing their sales copy for them when they need it. Let's take two guys. They both have equal skill sets and equal track records. One guy isn't on social media. Nobody really knows about him. He doesn't have a presence on social media. The other guy is on Twitter and he has 200,000 followers and he's talking all day long about how he's the copywriting guy. He's the one who he's giving social proof. He's giving testimonials, case studies. People are commenting under him being like, oh man, this is so great. You're so smart. We love you. Maybe even some clients are commenting under him being like, this guy helped us 10x our revenue or whatever. Which one of those two guys is going to do more business?
Mm-hmm.
The guy with the following all day. Yeah. And here's the beautiful thing about it. How's the first guy going to drum up business? He'll have some word of mouth because he's so good, but he's also doing a lot of cold outreach.
Yeah.
He is DMing, cold emails, whatever, cold calls, businesses being like, here's what I do. Here's the track record I have. He'll get some inbound, like I said, because he's good, but he's also going to still have to use cold outreach. But the guy with the big following, doesn't have to do cold outreach. I don't do cold outreach. I don't. Every once in a blue moon, I'll send an email to my list being like, by the way, I got a coaching spot open. Do you want to do it? Or I'll chat something up in the community and I'll say, hey, I'm taking on a guy. Anybody interested? But I don't do cold outreach because it comes to me by virtue of the gravity that I have and the track record that I have and people talking about it publicly, which isn't the case if you don't invest in an online brand and an online persona.
I don't know if that
answered your question, but I think
it's partially. But I'm going to come back to it now, because if someone's listening to this and they don't have that massive following yet, maybe they're still growing. If they're going to throw offers into their tweet, is it just a matter of just throwing them in the comments after a certain amount of time? Is there like a rule? Like, can I post it in the comments directly after posting the tweet, or do you have to wait for the tweet to kind of, I guess, gain some virality?
Yeah, definitely wait. Definitely wait. And if you go on my timeline, you'll see there's recently I did a price increase on my info product. And when I do that, I promote it. I'll talk about it because I want to sell as much as I can. Because I think it's really good and really underpriced. And the price is going to keep going up, by the way. It's going to go up forever. So you might as well.
If anyone's listening, get into it now.
So the rule of thumb, I don't ever do standalone promotional stuff, almost never. Because like you said a minute ago, James, it's dead in the water. Twitter hates. Yeah. Think about what the algorithm wants. Think about that. It wants people spending time on their app. And the second you post a link that gets people off of the Twitter app or off of the Instagram app, they're like, we don't like this. You're taking people away. We need you to add people. So the second you do that, am I clipping? I'm going to turn this down.
No, you're good.
I'm good. Okay. The second you do that, you're going to get deprioritized. You're going to get throttled. You are. And that's just part of it. And that's okay. Sometimes you accept that and you say, well, I want to get this link out. I want to promote my offer. I'll take the ding in the algorithm. But the best way to fight against that is there's two ways. The first way is there's my wife's cat. It's not my cat. Anyone watching it. It's my wife's cat. She came with two cats. Your son's those cats. Yeah, okay, I freaking do. My wife had cats. All right, what do you want? But the first thing you can do is, like you said, is post something kind of tangentially related to what you're about to talk about. Like if I'm promoting my dad's online business toolbox, I'll talk about how I was able to build this business and spend more time with my family. And that's important to me. And that tweet will do okay because people like engaging with stuff like that. And then I'll let it go a little while. And then under that, I'll do the CTA. So I'll attach it, like make a little mini thread. Here's the CTA. If you're interested on how I did it, go here, buy this thing, and it'll teach you everything you need to know. That's one way to do it. You're still going to get penalized because you are taking people off the app, and that's just the way it is. But it's a trade-off, and you just do it sparingly. It's like you're depositing money in a bank and you're taking money out of a bank, and that's the game. And putting a link on there, you're taking a little bit of money out. Okay, well, cost of doing business. The other thing to do is, especially for higher ticket offers, this is what I recommend clients do. I work with a ton of fitness coaches, and the best results that they get are when they will put a CTA that doesn't take people off of Twitter, but instead directs people to DM them. So you wouldn't say, here's my CTA, go fill out my form on JotForm and go away from Twitter and fill out my form and I'll be in touch if you qualify. You'll say, here's my CTA, send me a DM and we'll talk about whether you're qualified. And that way you're keeping people on Twitter. You're doing what Twitter cares about. You're doing what Twitter wants. You're keeping people on the app. You're just taking them from the timeline to the DMs. And so that way, you know, coaches with $4,000 or $5,000 offers, that's the way to go. That in addition to email, but keep people on the app, send them to your DMs, and then you have a little conversation with them and you ask them a few questions and you say, hey, the guys that do this are usually XYZ. Is that you? The guys that have a lot of success doing this usually have these three, four things going on. Let me know, is that you? And you can qualify them a little bit. And then you say, okay, great. This sounds good. We should talk. Here's the link, schedule a phone call and I'll explain how everything works.
Gotcha. And I love this topic of the high ticket service as well. I wanted to dive down this rabbit hole because I think most people get into the space kind of want the allure of the idea of passive income, right? They just want to kind of sit back, affiliate, display ad off things, just bring money in. They kind of not doing much else, but the high ticket, at least the services are a way, if you're not making much money in the beginning, to potentially skyrocket that income a little bit and bring in more where you can kind of reinvest in the business. And the amount of money people are charging for some of these high ticket offers that you were telling me about not too long ago, I couldn't believe it. Like, especially coming, I mean, you mentioned fitness coaches now, especially coming from that world where working professional sport, you don't even make that money. I mean, the salary is a dog shit when you work in professional sport. And just the idea that you can charge that much for something that what I would perceive as not that valuable, but for the person who's actually doing it is probably perceived as very high value because of the result or the outcome of what's happening. It's interesting. And I want you to dive into maybe how you can look to provide a high ticket offer, or how you can develop one, because I'm not as sure all niches can do it. I know you mentioned fitness, that's a relatively easy one to give an example of, but are there examples of other niches where they have high ticket offers and how you would develop them?
Yeah, that's one of the things I do, is I coach people on getting their offer right. And I did this backwards. I was the average frustrated guy who I was the guy you described, James. I wanted money I didn't have to. I wanted to build once, sell 1,000 times. And that's great. And I still, to this day, I get more of a dopamine hit when I sell a $40 ebook than I do when I get a $10,000 Stripe deposit, because I know that the $40 ebook doesn't have any more work attached from me. But if somebody's paying me $10,000, I'm gonna be working my butt off for them. So it hits a little better when I know there's no work attached to it. But everybody who's starting online, this is my philosophy, should put together a high ticket offer first before they go in. They try to create ebooks or try to create communities. And this isn't how everybody does it. This is just my philosophy. And the reason why is because when you are putting together your high ticket offer, it's easier. So I made the mistake early on of building a product without really talking to anybody to find out if people wanted it or not. And I built the whole product. I spent months on this thing, making it perfect without really even knowing if it would sell. And it sold a little bit, but not nearly as much as it should have, not nearly as much as it could have. And I had sunk hours and hours and hours and hours into this thing. And it was a total net on my effort. It was a waste of time. It was a money loser if you count in my time. But if you start with a high ticket offer, all you're doing is putting together five really simple things. A high ticket offer is just five things, and you can do that work in 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And then your job, instead of building out this big product or this big program, then your job is to go try and validate that high ticket offer by selling it in the DMs or on a phone call or whatever through your timeline. And if you can sell it, then you sell something for several $1,000s right off the bat. Then you go do the work. Then you say, okay, well, how am I actually going to deliver this thing? And then you do the work, but you already know it's validated. So it feels a lot better to do that work versus spending even more time than that building out this ebook course or whatever you're building that you aren't 100% sure that people even want in the first place. Mm-hmm. The right thing to do is build that high ticket offer first, try to sell that. And then this is the other piece. Once you've got so many clients that you can't take anymore, this is what I did when I finally got it right. We maxed out our coaching clients. We're usually full. There's spot for one every month or two or whatever, but we're usually pretty full. Then I put together the things that people ask about my clients that they have the most trouble with. I put that into an ebook, into an online course, because then I know it's validated. Because if I have five clients who are all asking me, how do I create my offer? Well, okay, that's something people want to learn about. Let me put that in my ebook, which I did. And so to get to the other answer to your question, James, how do you create an offer? A high ticket offer. I do think almost every niche can create one. Some niches have a way easier time than others, but the high ticket offer, like I said, has five parts. And this is you can go look at my course. I talk about this in there. There's five things that go into a high ticket offer. One, the outcome. What are you doing for people? What do they get in exchange for their money? And the bigger and more measurable that outcome is, the better. the more people are thinking about this problem in the front of their mind every single time, every single second that they're awake, the more you're going to be able to charge for that. So a good example is if somebody has 40 pounds to lose. Well, if your offer is, I'm going to help you lose 40 pounds, that's really measurable. They know whether or not they did that, and they're thinking about it. If you're 40 pounds overweight, you never stop thinking about that. Every time you walk in front of a mirror, every time you walk up a flight of stairs, every time you take a family picture and you look at the picture later, you're thinking about, I got 40 freaking pounds to lose. You never stop thinking about that. So make your outcome as measurable and as big of a deal to the person as possible. That's the first part. The second part is the time commitment and the length of time. So the first part is how measurable is your outcome. The second part is the time commitment and the length of time. And what that means is, my client, you, how much time are you going to spend on this to get this outcome that I promised? And how long is it going to take? So it might be you're going to spend 30 minutes a day. We're going to get it done in 4 months. You can charge pretty much for that because it's not a big burden on the client. But if you're saying it's going to take you 2 hours a day and it's going to take a year, your price is going to go down because it's a big burden on the client. So you have to figure out those first two things. You have to figure out, what is the big outcome? What am I going to get them in exchange for their money? How long is it going to take, and how much time are they going to have to invest? The third thing you have to figure out is the method of delivery. And that's really simple. You don't need to overthink this, but this is, instead of creating the ebook, think about this as like, if I were to create the ebook, what would I do? So you may be a fitness coach and you say, we're going to lose 40 pounds. It's going to take 3 months. Spend an hour a day on it, and we're going to do it through, I'm going to get you meal plans, workout plans, and we'll have calls and a text channel. Boom. That's all you need to do for step three. Just think about, what is the method? What is the medium? How is the client's life going to look on a daily basis? That's it. Fourth thing is the guarantee. And I recommend a guarantee with all of my offers. And obviously the better guarantee that you can make, the more you can charge and the more that you'll sell. So like a fitness coach, I always counsel them, make a satisfaction-based guarantee. Like, you're going to be satisfied. If you're not satisfied for any reason, all you have to do is ask. Whether it's day one of us working together or our last day together, all you have to do is ask. I'll give you your money back. Boom. Nobody ever asks, by the way. Almost nobody asks. And figure out what your guarantee is and incorporate that into your offer. That's step four. Another popular guarantee is like, if you don't get the result in the time that I said, then we'll just keep going until you get it and you don't have to pay me anymore. Well, you got me as long as it takes. That's my favorite, for a lot of the business coaching that I do, because it's easier to get the results for a business client than it is for a fitness client, for a lot of different reasons. But I'm really like they literally just do what I say and they get the results we talk about. Whereas a fitness client, you usually have like all these emotional problems that they might be dealing with, and they have a lot of other baggage happening that it's a lot more on them. So I offer a different guarantee for business clients than I would for a fitness client. But whatever your guarantee is, the stronger you can make it, the more confident you can make the prospect in what you're doing and that their money's going to be safe with you and that it's a good investment, you can charge more, you'll close more. And then the fifth piece is just the price. What do you charge for that? And again, you can charge more for a really painful problem that has a really measurable outcome that gets done in a really small amount of time that requires a really small time commitment from the prospect that has a really simple method of delivery that has a really strong guarantee. Raise your price if that's what you got, versus if you got something that's a fuzzy problem that isn't really that measurable, that isn't really that big of a deal. I'm going to help you get rid of the hiccups. Like, okay, you're not going to charge a lot for that. nobody cares. But I'm going to help you quit porn forever. If you're addicted to porn, you'll pay a lot for that. So then you just measure your price based on how on the preceding four things and where they fall.
Oh, I like that. That's hopefully some ammo for anyone listening as well. And I think we'll end the podcast on that note too, because hopefully people can take action on some of the things we talked about here. But where can people find and follow you, Harrison, and see what you're up to, see what you're doing on Twitter, Instagram, and all that?
Twitter. Send me a DM at Save Your Sons, just like it sounds, all one word on Twitter. I don't do email. That was a promise I made to myself when I left my 9-to-5. I hate email. I write emails to my email list, but I don't respond to emails. I don't. End of story. my accountant and my lawyers don't like that, but that's what I do. but send me a DM. I do respond to DMs. So if you want to talk, send me a DM on Twitter at Save Your Sons. Instagram, save.your.sons, because somebody picked my username up before I started the account. Yeah, somebody got me. Oh, well. You can send me a message there. I don't check those quite as often as I check Twitter, but I still usually will see it. Same on TikTok, save.your.sons, and then Facebook at Save Your Sons, all one word. And you can,
perfect.
I'll have links in my bios where you can go sign up for the email list, whatever else you want to do.
Sweet. And I'll add those down in the description too. But thanks for coming on, Harrison. Appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. Until the next episode, goodbye.